here's your host.
Welcome to the Live, Love and Eat show. My name is Bernadine Otto. I'm a certified transformational nutrition coach, a EFT practitioner, and I'm also the managing editor of a magazine called the Live, Love and Eat magazine. The Live, Love and Eat podcast is all about health and wellness. We interview health experts who have all overcome their own personal life and health challenges. Learn all about health, fitness, nutrition, spirituality, wellness, and so much more. This podcast will change the way you live, love, and eat. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Live, Love, and Eat show. Now, our special guest today is Mindy Gorman-Platcher. Now, she's a certified functional nutritionist, a lifestyle practitioner, and eating psychology coach with over 25 years of experience. Mindy is passionate about helping others recover from eating disorders and create a healthier lifestyle. Now, Mindy's approach to eating disorders tackles the root cause of the issue and emphasizes that how and why you eat is just as important as what you eat. Through her integrative approach, she also looks at the impact disordered eating has on one's daily life, digestion, and hormones. Now, her life experience and training inspired her to create a framework that combines functional nutrition, positive psychology, and mind-body science called the Freedom Promise. She has established a compassionate resolution to physical and emotional challenges resulting from chronic and complex health issues as they relate to eating disorders. In addition, Mindy is the author of the Freedom Promise, 7 Steps to Stop Fearing What Food Will Do to You and Start Embracing What It Can Do for You. Welcome, Mindy.
Oh, thank you, Bernadine. It's wonderful to be here. And thank you for that beautiful introduction.
It's such a pleasure to have you here on the show today. But, you know, before we start the podcast, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your story? How did you get started in your career?
Well, my career is really a culmination of my personal experience with recovery from more than 25 years of eating disorders and various forms of disordered eating and thinking. My training and my experience helped me create the Freedom Promise in an effort to not only embrace my recovery, but to pay it forward. So my story really began decades ago as a teen when I had it drilled into me that how I looked was very important. And the message I received and interpreted was that my beauty was very dependent upon how thin I was. And dieting in our family really was an activity. It was a family project. Everybody got on board. And from Monday to Friday, well, Friday evening, we would restrict and experiment with all sorts of weight loss programs. But by Friday evening and into the weekend, everything went to hell, so to speak, and the food was a free-for-all. So this was really very confusing to a young woman, young girl, who was trying to do it all right. So that was one part of it. But the other part of it that I think had a more of a lasting impact on me, combined with the activities and the desire to be thin, was that it was very important for me to do everything right and to gain the approval of my parents and those that I looked up to for my security and my safety and my need to belong. I was also unfortunately given the message that my feelings didn't matter. I was told a little too often that I was too sensitive. I shouldn't express what I was feeling. I didn't feel seen. I didn't feel heard. So you put that all together and it morphs into the desire to figure out how to navigate the world that I no longer felt safe in. Mm-hmm. And that showed itself up as disordered and dysfunctional relationship with food and my body.
That is, yeah. I want to, you know, you said something that really like touched my heart, and it is that, you know, I always, because I'm also a coach, and I always look at my clients and, you know, I always tell them, we're going back to your childhood. And, you know, some of my clients just look at me and like, okay, you know, what are we going to find there? But, you know, I always think that when you like, you know, it's how you grow up as well, you know, and how food are introduced to you as a young girl, you know, and what else I want to talk about is, you know, it's not always just about the food, you know, it's what's going inside, what's happening inside here. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, I think there's a lots of women listening now, and I want to talk about eating disorders. How does a woman or a girl know that she has an eating disorder? What is the signs, you know, to look for?
Oh, there are so many, because there are all levels of eating disorders. They show up differently. Of course, there is an eating disorder that we all know of as anorexia, anorexia nervosa, where one really is afraid of gaining weight and basically develops a psychologically driven fear of food. But I have to say that not everybody who suffers from anorexia is underweight. And that is a huge misconception, that if somebody is of normal weight, then they can't have an eating disorder. So I really want to lay that out. Then there is bulimia nervosa, where there are episodes of restricting, episodes of overeating past the point of fullness, eating that is meant to numb, avoid, and distract one from feeling any emotion. And that's followed by purging, compensatory behaviors such as vomiting, laxative abuse, or compulsive overexercising. And then there is binge eating disorder, which is characterized by those episodes of overeating, compulsively, emotionally driven behaviors with food, past the point of fullness, in an effort to numb, distract, avoid, but there is no purging, no compensatory behaviors. Then there is ARFID, avoidance restrictive food intake disorder, where somebody has an aversion to certain types of food. That's usually in response to a trauma, whereas the person is catatonically afraid of eating certain types of food, and the list gets larger. So that could feed into an anorexia type of eating disorder. Then, of course, there is disordered eating, which basically is everything that I just described, but to a lesser degree. So it could be the woman who is totally enmeshed in diet culture, mm-hmm. you know, sourcing her self-worth by everything outside of herself, the scale, the next diet fad that she views as the holy grail, all in an effort to feel better about herself. So she might engage in restrictive eating, and that's going to backfire. So she's going to end up having situations where she's overeating, perhaps binging, and then maybe she's using compensatory behaviors to get rid of what she imagine she overate. So that's just a synopsis of all of that. But what I want to say about eating disorders is that there's a lot of innuendo, there's a lot of nuance to the idea of recovery, because it is so personal. As you started out our time together, everybody has a story. And as you also talked about how you coach your clients, you know, everybody's story is unique to them. And it's also about how we interpret that story.
Yeah.
Right. But what's really important for our audience to be aware of is why food is so, plays such a big part yes. in these stories as self-soothing, self-coping mechanisms, is we have to remember that our very first experience with being held, with being seen, with being heard, being nurtured, has to do with being fed.
Yeah.
So we're thrust into this world, the bright lights, the cold room, right? Being born, which is a trauma in itself, where it's swaddled and warm for the first time. We have no sense of self, no ego, no autonomy. We're only aware of the person who is responsible for our care and feeding.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the line, we might not feel safe anymore. We might not feel seen. We might not feel heard, but the brain remembers, felt unsafe, eat, feel better. And that we carry with us for all time.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned that because, you know, I'm a recovered emotional eater, and I used to, like, when I get emotional or I'm in distress, or I would just start eating, binge eating, like, you know. And what you said now, you know, it starts from, it's, I believe it starts from when you're in your mother's womb as well, you know. And you know, it's just, you know, it's like you said, the way you grow up when you're small, you're this little girl and you're protected. And when you grow older, you know, you get to see more like social media, magazines, you know, and you see this girl that looks, she's perfect, you know, and you think, I have to look like her, you know what I mean? I think that social media and, you know, TV, television plays a big role in that as well, you know, and diets as well. There's so many diets out there, you know, and, you know, people think, oh, if I do that diet, I'm going to look like, you know, the women that did the diet, if that makes sense. So there's just, you know, I think, you know, it's emotions as well, but it's also like with social media and, you know, what the people reflect outside as well.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack there with what you said. You know, social media, diet culture, that's created a society essentially that is more connected to comparison than they are to connection. And connection to what? Connection to the wisdom of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are living in a society where most are sourcing their self-worth from something outside of themselves, forgetting that we all have a birthright that makes us worthy.
Yeah.
Right? We were born worthy. How did that get lost? It gets lost through messaging. It gets lost through trauma. It gets lost from fear. And very often the disordered eating becomes a way to self-soothe, a way to navigate the world that we no longer feel safe in.
Mm.
Right. And, you know, you talked about emotional eating. Mm. You know, from where I sit, there are three types of emotional eating. There's eating that is driven by an emotionally driven situation, right? You eat because you're stressed, you're angry, you're disappointed, you're fearful, you're sad, but you're usually aware. You're aware of the fact that you came home and you had a bad day. So you're reaching for the bag, the box, the carton. For some people, it's the bottle of wine, right? So it's an emotionally charged situation. In this situation, you can usually stop because you maintain that sense of awareness. Yes, sometimes that leads to the next level, which is binge eating, which is eating in an effort not to feel emotion. And there's a big difference there, right? You just shut yourself down. You're numbing. You're avoiding a situation that you deem intolerable. You're distracting yourself from something that you don't want to feel. But then there's the kind of emotional eating that we should all aspire to bring emotion to the table with us, to be excited. And a very healthy eater, I don't mean the kind of food they're eating, but someone who has a healthy relationship with food is going to have that extra piece of deliciousness just because it reminds them of a grandmother's recipe or a holiday tradition or just because it's somebody's birthday.
Yeah.
And that's what we should all strive for. So I love the name of your podcast, Live, Love, and Eat. You know, we all know how to diet, but very few of us know how to eat. Yeah. And that's how I hope we can influence people today with our conversation.
Yeah, I want to go back to emotional eating as well. I also think that, you know, when I was an emotional eater, I used to like eat and then I would like feel ashamed. You know, like, oh, Benin, what did you just eat? What did you just do? And you just like, in your mind, you tell yourself, tomorrow, I will do better. Tomorrow, I won't eat that. And then tomorrow comes and it's the same thing. And you tell yourself again, oh my gosh, what did you do? You asked, you know, what did you do? And I want to go back to also, or I want to go forward to limiting beliefs as well. You know, limiting beliefs like, I will never eat healthy, or I will never lose this weight, or I will never, you know, eat the right foods. You know, I think limiting beliefs also plays a very, a role in also in, you know, your relationship with food and how you see food as well.
Yeah, and that's why with the work I do, the very first phase of my work with clients is about eliminating those limiting and toxic beliefs. But we can't do that successfully and fully until we understand the context within which those beliefs developed.
Yeah.
And therefore you can understand the context within which the behaviors developed. So it's about awareness, curiosity, acceptance and compassion for those beliefs because they morphed out of a need that we had.
Yeah.
And then we can lovingly let them go.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you say that. I also want to talk a little bit about the gut and the brain connection. How do you heal your gut and detox your mind?
Okay, well, the majority of people that I work with are presenting with gut issues. And statistically, 90 to 98% of people who have struggled with eating disorders, eating challenges, also are challenged with some sort of GI dysfunction. And these symptoms remain long after the behaviors resolve themselves. So that we know. All right, but what is the gut-brain connection? It's a bi-directional pathway, a two-way pathway. The gut sends messages to the brain sends messages to the gut. And truthfully, the gut sends more messages to the brain than the brain sends to the gut. The gut is often known as the second brain. The gut has trillions of nerve endings. The gut is also controlled by the vagus nerve, which in response to the vagus nerve, which is the longest nerve in the body. It goes from the brainstem through the digestive system, innervates all the organs, and that vagus nerve responds to stress. It is part of the autonomic nervous system. So when we are stressed, whether we are in a stressful, fear-inducing situation, or we're stressed because of the self-talk that we're involved with, telling ourselves things about ourselves that might not be true, but are stressing us anyway, we shut down that vagus nerve. We activate the sympathetic nervous system. We're in fight, flight, or freeze. When the vagus nerve is activated, we're in parasympathetic mode. Everything is flowing beautifully, otherwise known as rest and digest. When we are stressed, when the brain is sending stress signals to the gut, digestion shuts down. We're wired that way. When we need to use all of our energy to run away from a tiger or a dinosaur or a predator, we need all of our energy in our limbs. So digestion shuts down. So when we are stressed as a result of disordered eating, disordered thinking, we're not digesting. We're not digesting, we're not absorbing, we're not assimilating, we're not metabolizing. Another thing to remember is that neurotransmitters very often are created in the gut. Serotonin, which is that feel-good chemical, 65% of our serotonin is created in the gut. Mm. When that's not functioning properly, we're stressed, we're distressed, we are anxious, and we could be experiencing depression.
I love that. That is, the gut. I mean, the gut is very important, you know, like you said, that's your second brain. Now, I want to go back to also, you know, I want to talk about a little bit about the relationship of food. You know, many of my clients, you know, when they see food, they restrict food, like, you know, if they at somebody's house for a party or something, and I see this cake, they are like, oh, I'm not going to eat that because I'm going to gain weight, you know, or, you know, any type of food. Can you tell us a little bit about how can you transform your relationship with food? You know, when you walk into a room and you see food, you don't get that panic attack like, oh my gosh, there's food, you know, I shouldn't even look at it. How do you transform your relationship with food?
Oh, it's a process, Bernadine. You know, I wish there was a sentence I could give you. Basically, you're going to transform your relationship to food when you transform your relationship to yourself, right? Our relationship to self is reflected on in our relationship to everything else. So if we are sourcing our self-worth because of how we think we need to look, then we are going to be fearful of what food will do to us. You know, I work with my clients to educate them to the beauty of what food can do for them. We bring awareness to why they fear food. Get rid of all those toxic and inflammatory beliefs about food, and help them to make empowered choices and shift from a mindset of scarcity, which is the diet mindset, right? Fearing food, to one of abundance, understanding that they, if they would allow themselves to enjoy food, allow themselves to have that piece of cake, if it makes them feel well, if they're okay with it, and if they eat it experientially, if they really enjoy the cake, taste it, appreciate the taste, the texture, the temperature, they're not going to overeat. So it's a question of building trust. It's a question of understanding hunger and fullness cues, understanding satiation cues. You can be full but not satisfied. Understanding what you're really hungry for. If a woman is afraid of eating a piece of cake because she's afraid that it's going to start a feeding frenzy, then that's what needs to be explored. Her relationship to herself. The food is a placeholder for emotions that need to be expressed. It's very often not about the food. It's about relationship to self. When clients come to me and they say, oh, if I can only improve my relationship with food, my life will be wonderful. I tell them I respectfully disagree. It's the other way around. When you improve your relationship to self, when you look at how you're styling your life, your relationship with food will improve.
I love that. And, you know, it's everything's inside. And I think if you heal your inner self, you will heal yourself, outer self, you know, and it's like you say, you will see food, you know, you will love food, you know what I mean? You will heal your relationship with food as well. And it's, you know, I agree, it's all inside, you know, you have to heal yourself first before you can heal what's outside of here. I know that you, have a book, The Freedom Promise, and I will link the book underneath this podcast as well so that our listeners can, you know, go look at your book and, you know, read it. Can you tell us a little bit about your book and how can readers benefit from it and what is it all about?
Well, my book outlines, actually details, my signature framework, which are the 7 steps to stop fearing what food will do to you and start embracing what it can do for you. And those steps really came about organically, and they're an acronym for freedom. So the first step is find your enough, face your feelings, feel the love, which speaks to gratitude. The second step is relax or rest and digest. Step 3 is eat when you're hungry, stop when you're not. Step 4 is eat mindfully. Step 5 is do something every day to make your body feel alive. Step 6 is only eat whole foods as often as you can. And step 7 is make sure you surround yourself with what truly nourishes. And if you'd like, I can just give a little synopsis of each of those steps. So, you know, finding your enough is about digging deep. It's about going inside. It's about embracing a lightness of being, which in turn will allow your body to become lighter. Facing your feelings is obvious. You know, feelings need to be expressed. They need to be felt. That makes us human. And feeling the love is all about gratitude. Relax talks about the science of stress. It's morphed into later works that I've done, my self-study course, which introduces more of the functional medicine approach than the book did. I didn't have that training when I wrote the book. So relax, rest, and digest is the science of stress and how even toxic thoughts can shut down digestion and create serious issues in the body. Eat when you're hungry, stop when you're not. That introduces the differences between true physical hunger and heart, mind, or emotional hunger. And then, of course, there's toxic hunger, which is what happens when we are introduced to food products disguised as food that are manufactured in such a way that we truly cannot eat just one. Eat mindfully, bring mindfulness to the table. You know, invite yourself to the head of your table as an honored guest. Really be focused. Make eating an experience. When you eat, eat. Do something every day to make your body feel alive. That speaks to the joy of movement, honoring our bodies with movement as opposed to punishing them, abusing them with exercise that's designed to make it go away. And in that step also, we talk about body image. And then only eat whole foods as often as you can. Well, that's the Nutrition 101 part of the book, talking about macronutrients, micronutrients, but also the energetics of food and how food impacts mood. And then, of course, make sure you surround yourself with what truly nourishes. That speaks to your purpose, your spirituality, your relationships, and of course, your relationship with self. Because what truly nourishes us, we're never going to find in the kitchen.
I love that. That is amazing.
And every chapter, every step starts with an anecdotal story of my own insanity, what it was like for me, all of the failed attempts at recovery, and then dives into what I've learned to be true.
I love that. I will definitely link that down, this podcast, and I will also get a copy and read that as well.
Thank you. Let me know what you think.
I will. It was such a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. You are doing such amazing work out there. It was so nice connecting with you today.
Thank you, Bernadine. Same for me. Really, have a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you. You too. This is your host, Bernadine Otto. Thank you for listening. If you love this show, please go and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode.